بسم الله توكلت على الله ولا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته My dear listeners, thank you for listening in on this beautiful warm Monday afternoon. I am Sister Khadija Muhammad taking you through the next hour with Let's Talk Life. Now, I hope you're all taking very well and a very good care of yourselves. Our primary school children are all back at school today for the rest of the week on everyday basis. And I think the anxiety levels are getting under control with the moms now that the kids are back at school. But we should also just remember to take the precautions and make sure that the kids are doing okay and that we're okay and still abide by all the coronavirus protocols that are necessary and should be in place. Having said that, today's topic is something related to what a lot of us feel that we somehow in our lives we've encountered some forms or some signs or some kind of a depressive state. And today we're going to be speaking about how to naturally overcome depression. Now, depression is something that can drain your energy and it can leave you feeling fatigued. It can leave you feeling empty. It's a whole lot of things that you can be feeling. You know, it's a common and it's a serious medical illness that affects how you feel, the way you think, how you act. But fortunately, it is something that is treatable. And it's something that affects millions of people, including some people in your life. It may be affecting you. It may be affecting someone in your life. And you may not realize that you face these similar challenges, emotions, and obstacles. But it is existent, and it is something that we are quite prevalent too. However, there are small steps that you can take to help yourself feel more in control and to improve your overall sense of well-being. And the key to self-treatment for depression is to be open. And today we're going to be speaking to a life coach. We're going to be speaking to Sister Farah Manju, who comes from a background in education and psychology. And since 2012 to present, Farah has done extensive studies in the mind and in the body connection. She's done alternate healing modalities, holistic therapies, and various coaching skills. And she ensures that she keeps up with the latest knowledge. And I think that is so important that we need to keep up with what is happening. And she keeps up with the latest knowledge and the skills in her field. And she's continuously growing herself with self-development courses and programs every 3 to 6 months. So with that beautiful introduction, I'm going to welcome Sister Farah Manju onto our show this afternoon. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to Let's Talk Life.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Welcome to the show, Sister Farah Manju.
Thank you so much for having me. Such a pleasure.
It's only my pleasure to have you. Today's topic, we're speaking, Sister Farah, on how to naturally overcome depression. And we know the key to self-treatment for depression, like I said, is to be open. It's to be accepting and loving towards yourself and also what you're going through. And, you know, I think you've mastered this about overcoming depression through natural means. How can you tell if someone is suffering from depression?
So the common signs to look out for in a depressed person is chronic fatigue. So when one feels very sleepy and lethargic, where they don't have much energy that drives them to do things that they used to actually enjoy doing previously. So that's one of the main signs. The second one is persistent sadness. So when a person experiences prolonged sadness for a longer period of time, and they cry uncontrollably, and they feel sad, but they probably don't understand why they actually feel sad. So there isn't like a reason for it. Or they find things that, you know, they look around them and their life just makes them sad and they feel pessimistic. So the persistent sadness is definitely a red flag of depression. And then depression also manifests in low self-esteem and a lack of self-worth. So a person who was previously very self-confident and who had a good self-esteem, then all of a sudden may actually lose morale and lose their confidence and belief in themselves and actually become insecure over their relationships or their life. So that is something that is where they're going downhill instead of progressing in that field. And the last point that I just wanted to touch on with the signs is having negative thoughts. So persistent, dull thoughts where mind is like obsessing about the worst thing that can happen and you're focusing on what's not working in your life. So that's definitely something to look at if you are focusing on problems instead of solutions and your mind is plagued by the negativity around you. So I think that sum up the main signs to look out for.
Main signs. Okay, and tell us a little bit about your own experience that you've encountered with depression.
Yes, so at the moment I have three kids and I'm in my mid-30s. But when I was in my 20s, I was diagnosed with postpartum depression. That was immediately after having my second child. And I was a fun-loving person, full of energy and bubbly. But during this phase of my life, I was like in a dark place, like a hole of despair. And I was really pessimistic. And people that previously knew me and knew the type of person I was just noticed that there was something amiss with me because I lost all my self-confidence and self-esteem. And I started, you know, doubting my relationships and feeling like I was not a good enough mother at that time. And it did affect my marriage negatively, affected my career. And I felt as though I was going through a downward spiral of negativity. And I reached out for professional help because I felt like the medication that I was on was not helping me. And at that time, I was still studying to become a teacher. So I was at crossroads with my life, and I had to make big decisions on, you know, which path to go on. And I just felt that I couldn't take those steps, and I lost motivation in wanting to pursue my career even. So everything was not working out. But when I made the decision to help myself, and I picked myself up, and I sought help, I found that the natural healing path was very effective. My first type of therapy that I tried was The Journey by Brandon Bays. And then I went on to try other different modalities and coaching that it really turned my life around, and I was able to work on issues that I didn't know I had, and I was able to unblock those traumas that were causing my depression. So getting to the root cause of it, I was able to heal. Yes?
You mentioned what was the natural techniques that you used again? I didn't quite get that.
Okay, so the first healing technique that I was introduced to was The Journey, which is a mind journey where you go into your past and you can you can access and unblock emotional traumas. So I actually had many traumas that were suppressed and that were causing the depression, and I got to the root cause and I actually healed myself from depression within a few months. And I was able to get off my meds and continue with my life and finish my studies. And that's when I decided that I want to help other women free themselves from depression or anxiety or emotional things coming from their past. And I made it my mission in life then to empower other women. And that's when I found my purpose as an empowerment coach doing the work that I do now.
Alhamdulillah for that. And I'm sorry that you had to encounter a journey like that. But a lot of times we notice that, you know, people just don't want to accept that they are in this depressive state or they have this mood disorder. And I think, like you said, it's when you realize that you need to seek the assistance and you need to seek the help and the support. And that alone already is your winning stick, you know, just to take the first step to say, you know, I need to do this for myself. And it's so important that we need to encourage and we need to empower and we need to educate women and people out there that this kind of a mood disorder exists. It is something, and it's very much very different from grieving, I think, Sister Farah, would you say? Because a lot of times people would say that I'm sad over a loss of a loved one or a job or a relationship or something of that sort, and I'm feeling depressed. And I think it's two different matters on its own. Depression is definitely a mood disorder that involves this persistent feeling of sadness and of loss of interest and fluctuations in your mood. So I think to just be aware of the situation that you're in already and to seek help is an important factor and an important step. Would you say that?
Yes, I do agree, especially because with depression, you're more stuck in the past. So it's got to do with the repressed emotional trauma that hasn't been dealt with. And then you carry that baggage into your life until you can't deal with it. And it just, it has negative consequences, you know, of having these emotions that you haven't unpacked and worked through. So even the sadness, there's always a reason for it. So going back to where it's all coming from, you can let go and make peace and move on then into your future life.
Most definitely. Sister Farah, tell us a little bit more in detail about these techniques to naturally overcome depression.
Yes. So I actually wrote an e-book. I compiled an e-book during the lockdown period last year. And it's actually a free e-book that one can get off my website. So my entire book is written around these five steps to overcome depression, which I personally used in my own journey to free myself from the depression. And then I was able to rediscover my inner joy and happiness. So the first step is to get to the root cause of what is making you sad and identify where you have lost your spark, your special sparkle of joy. And then the second step is to make peace with the past by healing your inner child. So that was the past trauma I was talking about.
Yes.
And step number three is to work through your emotions to access joy again. And step number four is to find the essence of who you are that gives meaning and purpose to your life. And step number five is to maintain a positive mindset through daily practices. So at the end of my ebook, I explore more in detail about the positive mindset because, you know, depression does start in the mind and manifests, you know, everywhere else on a emotional and physical level. So I unpack and discuss 10 practices that I use on a daily basis, and I inspire my clients and friends and family to practice just to maintain that positivity, because once you've healed yourself from depression, you are prone to go back into or get stuck in that state again, especially if you don't want to go on meds. So in order to keep up with that level of positivity and that, you know, having that growth mindset, it's important then to work on yourself daily. So in my book, I mention, you know, just some tips on what you can do daily. And I can just share with you at least three. So one that my go-to technique is positive affirmation to rewire your brain and to help you to naturally think positively. And another tip would be connecting with nature, going for nature walks to clear your mind and absorbing the sunshine. And the third step is keeping your body healthy through exercising, because the exercising also induces endorphins and feel-good hormones. And stretching your body has those feel-good chemicals. So there's many more. So if people are interested in learning more about these steps and tips, they can access my free ebook.
And some more detail maybe on how on your website and how we can get this free ebook.
Okay, so you go to Baraka, BARAAQA coaching. So it's barakacoaching.co.za. And in the menu tab, there is a tab that says free ebook. So you click on it and you fill your details in with your email, and the book will come automatically to your email inbox. Okay. And then you download it from
there.
So it's a free download, yes.
Oh, lovely. Okay, so it's barakacoaching.co.za, am I right? BARAQA coaching.co.za.
So it's BARAAQA. So it's Baraka.
Oh, sorry, Baraka. So it's BARAAQA coaching.co.za.
Yes, correct.
Okay, I hope our listeners got that. We will repeat it again at the end of the show, so it's no problem. Sister Farah, some final words for our listeners, you know, those that are actually dealing with depressive disorder, some final words of encouragement or any advice that you could offer them?
So to nip your depression in the bud is to act fast, so not to wait till you know, really down and out and in the dark hole of despair, like how I describe myself. But when you feel the first signs of sadness, or the signs that are in my book, there's actually 10 signs described in detail. So if you come across any of those signs and it resonates with you, to go out and seek help. Whether you go, whatever you prefer, whether you prefer the medical route or you prefer the natural route, it's entirely up to you. But to do something, to talk to somebody and get the right help that you require. Because also even just writing how you feel every day, like a mind journal where you just express your feelings in your diary, can be a good way to manage your thoughts and your emotions to see if they're negative or positive. So if you're a person that has a lot of negative thoughts and feelings throughout the day and it's consistent, then that's a sign that you need to act fast and seek help, because prevention is better than cure. So instead of being hooked on medication, you rather nip it in the bud naturally. And the quicker, the better.
And some people don't actually really respond to the medication in a very great way. It somehow dulls them, dulls their spirits a little bit more than they already feel, you know. It just depends on how you, I mean, your doctor may prescribe specific antidepressants. But I think that if you can try and go the natural way, like you mentioned and you spoke about, and just the way that you did it, it is definitely a better a solution for this depressive state.
Yes, I totally agree.
Sister Farah, can you hear me?
Yes. Yes, I can hear you. Okay. So I totally agree with that. I totally agree with going the natural route. That's what I promote and I preach. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of people that are already on antidepressants. And what I'd like to say to them is that there is hope for them to wean themselves off the antidepressants and to do things that naturally make them feel good and they can maintain a positive state and get out of that depressed state.
Definitely. Thank you so much for sharing that words of affirmation with us, and, you know, that motivation, should I rather say, that was the right word, that there is hope. And we thank you so much for being a part of the show today, Sister Farah Manju. Your content and your advice has been great. And we thank you for sharing your journey and also your ebook information with us. And we'll definitely mention it again at the end of the program for those listeners who would like to get your ebook and start working on naturally healing themselves, inshallah. Thank you for being part of the program.
My pleasure. Jazakallah for having me.
Jazakallah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Alaikum salam.
And there you have it, my dear listeners. That was Sister Farah Manju, who's a counselor and an author. And she shared some incredible advice with us. She shared a bit of her journey of postpartum depression. And, you know, a lot of us are on maybe experience symptoms of depression, and depression is treatable, and managing the symptoms is possible, even doing it the natural way, like Sister Farah had said. And if you want to get a little bit more acquainted with the natural methods and the natural ways of overcoming your depression, then you can get a hold of her ebook, which is A Journey to Free Yourself and to Discover Your Inner Joy and Your Happiness. And she speaks about 5 steps to overcome depression. And this can be, you can get your book, your ebook, through her website, which is barakacoaching.co.za. That is BARAAQA coaching.co.za. So reach out, don't be shy, get that ebook, read through it, and see how you can actually get yourself out of this depressive state. There's always a way. There's always a way, and there's always something that can help you and treat you, and always something that can make you feel better. So with that, we're going to go on to a short ad break, and when we get back, we will be introducing our next guest, inshallah. Do stay with us. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome back to Let's Talk Life. It's 2:34 p.m. in the afternoon, and we are on the second part of our show this afternoon. We had Sister Farah Manju, who spoke to us in the first part of the program about depression and how you can heal your depression naturally. And she spoke to us and gave us some great advice and spoke to us about her ebook. So if you still need to get a hold of her ebook, I'm just going to mention it one more time. It's barakacoaching.co.za, BARAAQA coaching.co.za. So be sure to get your hands on that ebook, inshallah. I mean, with the next part of the program, we are going to talk about the first 5 years of child development. And as parents, you know, we make it our goal to do whatever we can to improve the lives of our children. We read baby and toddler parenting books, and we research the various topics, and we provide the social interaction, and we ask a lot of questions, because we know early development, child development within the first 5 years of a child's life are somewhat critical. And one of the topics that becomes so important in parenting is our child's physical and cognitive development. And, you know, while no two children develop on the exact same timeline, and you'll see that if you have one or two or more kids, there are sensitive time periods in which major development milestones are reached. And one of the most critical periods in a child's development and learning is from birth to 5 years. So for this topic, we're going to welcome Kim Williams to our program this afternoon, and she's a sports scientist and a mom as well. So welcome, Sister Kim Williams, to Let's Talk Life this afternoon.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's only a pleasure, Kim. So, you know, many experts have described the mind of a young child to be somewhat of like a sponge. And that is so true. They say, you know, a child's mind is something like a sponge. They absorb everything. So from the time the infant is born through to the first 5 years of their lives, their mind is absorbing and learning constantly. And as parents, you know, we tend to forget the huge part that we actually play during these years, Kim, and how simple things like play and touch can significantly impact our child's mental health. Talk us through the first 5 years of a child's life and some of the important milestones.
Sure. So firstly, I'd like to say that I'm a mom to two little boys, ages 3 and 2. So I know exactly what you mean when you say that no two children develop the same way. I've obviously witnessed this with my own two kids. But I think if we want to just break it up into a few milestones that really stand out from birth. So we'll take it from birth to about 3 months. We're looking at things like sucking, degrossing reflexes, them being able to clench a fist, putting their hand in their mouth, things like that really seem to be important during that period. I remember that when my firstborn went for his first vaccine at the clinic, one of the exercises that the clinic sister did with him was with a pencil, just seeing whether if she places the pencils on the fingertips, would he be able to grip that? Similarly, on the toes, if she places it underneath the toes, will he be able to, you know, grip onto that? And those are the type of things we're looking out for in that 0 to 3. Then when we're moving over into the 3 to 6 months, we're looking at things like rolling over. Are they able to sit up against the cushion, those type of things, reaching for an object, playing with their toys. That's where I really enjoy the play gym, where you're able to lay them on their mat and see what are the type of movements that they engage in while they're on that mat. Are they kicking their legs? Are they getting excited, you know, to reach for whatever animals or dolls you might have on your play gym? Then moving into that 6 to 9 period, that's when we get our little busybodies. And this particular milestone region for my boys was completely different. And I think that us as parents played a big part in that because we babied our firstborn so much.
Yes,
we were so excited. He was always in our arms and we just wanted to carry him and love him. And during this part, he was not very mobile. And this is actually the mobility phase. That you're looking at the 6 to 9 months, where the increase in wanting to be mobile, grasp and pull on things, you know, sit up without any support. But he was lacking in this, and that came from, you know, I think as a mom, that came from the fact that he was always in the arms. So he lacked that, you know, that muscular, he had like muscular imbalances, if I could put it that way. Whereas with my second born in particular, we found that he just wanted to go and he wanted to do things to a point where at 9 months he was already exploring, wanting to walk on his own without us holding his hand. Then if we look at the 9 to 12 month phase, in this window of development, most babies are then able to pull themselves up to a seated position. They're able to stand without assistance. And they're most likely to start taking their first. And again, if I look at my kids, this phase also again for my second born was like easy. He just wanted to do it. And I mean, by 10 months old, he was already walking on his own.
Oh, wow.
With his big brother, he only started walking at 1 year, 2 months. So at about 14 months. So very big difference there. But then again, like I said, I feel like that parent interaction also plays a very big role in that. And then obviously if we look now at the ages of 1 to 5, the physical growth still happens tremendously during this period. But the developmental windows are much wider from ages 1 to 5. So I'm just going to take one or two things from each of the age groups. So if we look at 1 to 2, they'll start picking up things while standing. They'll start experimenting with walking backwards. And I really like the walking backwards with my boys. We always use the imagery of a truck and the beeping sound. So as we're looking backwards, we go beep, beep, beep. And they really love that.
To
they actually forget that they're walking backwards. And they focus on the fact that they're now a truck and they're making a beeping sound. Another one in this age category would be scribbling with markers or crayons, turning knobs and handles, and then moving and swaying to music. And then if we look at ages 2 to 3, here we get our bouncy bunnies where they love jumping in one place. They start experimenting with balancing on one foot, turning pages in a book, and then the scribbling now starts turning into where they want to start making sense of what they're actually scribbling. So you'll start noticing them starting trying to draw circles and those type of things. Then I'm now in the 3 to 4 with my firstborn because he's obviously now, he'll be turning 4 in November. And we're now in the stage where he wants to do the big things or what they consider as the big things. Climbing up the slide by himself without any help. Sliding down by himself. Going on the big bicycle and learning how to pedal. And don't hold the bike, Mom. I can do it. I'm a winner. You know, those type of things.
Yeah.
Pulling and steering toys. A big thing for us at this moment is balancing as well. So he wants to know how to put one foot in front of the other, walking in a straight line. Building blocks, so Legos are a big thing, building tall towers, and then shapes and clay and all of those type of things, they start finding, or I found that he started finding a big interest in that from the age of 3, and it's just increasing daily as new things come home. So if a new toy comes, let's experiment, let's do what can this do, what can't this do. And then something that I'm not obviously familiar with would be the 4 to 5, because I haven't as a mom reached that milestone as yet. But obviously from, like you say, mom's research, parents' research, and read a lot. And you'd find them starting to, do the bigger mobile movements. Like they're wanting to learn how to do somersaults and cartwheels and, when it comes to the finer motor skills, they want to start experimenting with scissors, and we need to start teaching them the safety of, how do you hold the scissor, what do you cut, what don't you cut, and then the copying of the shape. So we're now moving away from our scribbling to our trying to make sense of what we're doing, and now wanting to start copying what we see. So if we see a square, can I replicate that square? But I strongly believe as a mom to these two little boys with their own personalities, own development journey, that it's so different. As much as we have these guidelines, I find my 2-year-old now has found an interest in scissors. So
already
now at the age of 2, having to try to teach him how to hold, because he's got such a strong personality where he's like, okay, my big brother wants to know how to do that, so I should know how to do that. And I think that also plays a big factor when there's more than one child in a household, is that you find that the smaller siblings develop a lot quicker and they reach certain milestones a lot faster because they're trying to replicate what their older sibling is actually doing.
It's observational learning, I think,
Yes, correct. Yes, that's right.
So aside from the basic caregiving of just feeding and cleaning up your child and stuff, what are some of the best ways to feed that absorbent mind? I mean, what do the young kids need from their parents to reach their full potential during those years?
So something that you obviously said earlier was that the mind of a child is like a sponge. Sometimes I'd like to think of the mind of a child as a camera. And they constantly watch you as they feel, okay, what are you doing? How are you acting? How are you speaking? What are you saying? So for me, feeding their absorbent mind not just comes from teaching them things, but it also goes in conjunction with your day-to-day as to how you carry yourself as a parent. What are you? What type of activities are you choosing to focus your time on with your kids? So if I can use my firstborn as an example again, obviously he was a little bit more delayed than my secondborn with a lot of things, with the walking, even with his speech, to a point where we thought he needed speech therapy. He had an issue with his ears that we picked up late. And I feel like it came a lot from the babying phase of, you know, he's still small. Yeah. He will learn. Oh, don't put too much pressure on him.
And a lot of us do that,
Yes, that's true. And last year when we hit lockdown, he had just turned three. And we obviously now started working from home as parents, and we spend a lot more time with our children. And I kid you not, the difference it made was the extra time that we spent with him. And not doing miraculous things, you know, trying to be homeschool teachers. We literally spent more time playing with him. We spent time on the trampoline. We spent time making different sounds, acting like different animals. We tapped into their creativity. So for both of them, if they wanted to be a lion, we were lions for that day. If
the things we do, hey?
Yeah, if they wanted to be cars, we were going around in cars the whole day. Yeah. We would climb on the scooters. So like all of those little physical activities and us actually spending that additional time with him, surprisingly, without us focusing on the speech, he started babbling nonstop. And when he started speaking, it was literally like this boy has known how to talk all his life because he knew about various things. He would tell us about excavators and this and that, and it all just came from play. So I feel like for me as a mom, one of the most important things for that absorbent and photogenic mind, or photographic mind rather, would be what you choose to do with them in that time, how you play with them, how much time are you spending with them, what are you talking to them about. Are you reading to them? What type of stories are you reading to them? So all of that, during that absorbent phase of the mind, it's effortless for the kids. So you might be putting in a lot of effort thinking up games and tricks and things, but it's so effortless for the kids that they're taking all of this in without even realizing, and that remains a foundation for their personality, essentially.
Couldn't agree more. You know, Kim, I just actually want to go on to the topic about with regards to parents and adults maybe taking so much of their time, and obviously mobile devices, it takes up a huge chunk of our attention span, of an adult's attention span. So, you know, I think it's an important question that I'm going to ask is, how do the kids actually respond to the lack of attention, or more so, how are they affected mentally and emotional in the times when they feel like they're being ignored? Because I mean, the adults are so busy on their mobile devices and the attention is not given as much as it would be, it would seem fit for the kids. So how do they actually, how are they affected during these times of being feeling ignored?
So I'm going to share something that my dad used to tell us as kids. And every time we would do something that he was unhappy about, he would say, "Don't do as I do, do as I say." And you know, it was like, okay, like I don't really understand, because technically if you as my parent are doing something, it should be okay. You know, that's how kids perceive it. So I think that, you know, in that time that we're spending so much time on our devices, on our laptops, on our phones, etc., our kids are observing us. And one of two things can happen. It's either that they become withdrawn and they feel alone, and they start harboring that in their mind as little as they are. Or it could go another way where they think that that's the right behavior and they too want to do it. So I want my own cell phone, I want my own laptop, and when you're doing it, I want to do it. So you can't tell me to do it. And that's where that whole don't do as I do as I say comes, because now but you're doing it, so it must be okay for me. But now you're telling me, no, you can't. So children, that's really where the, you know, the personality also comes from, in terms of how am I going to deal with the situation emotionally as a child? Am I going to brush it off and allow it to be, to affect me at a later stage where I come back and I'm like, yes, but you never had time for me, because children tend to do that the bigger they get. And they try to justify now their actions based on the fact that, yes, when I was 5 years old, you never used to play soccer with me. You always used to be on your phone. Or they become, like I say, the other one would be withdrawn and quiet and reserved, where they end up dealing with their emotions on their own, or trying to deal with their emotions on their own, which obviously then goes into a lot more psychological perspectives or aspects that I'm not really clued up on. But I do believe that they then become so withdrawn and isolated from the from everyone around them because of the fact that they felt like they were left alone. Or they replicate the parent's behavior. And if the parent allows, you buy your child their own phone. I mean, how many kids have their own cell phones these days?
Yeah.
How many kids have their own laptops, even at a young age? So it does tend to happen. But another funny story I would like to share with you is that I went to the doctor the other day, and the doctor's room has the sign with no that says no cell phone. So it's a little circle with a cell phone and the line through it. And there was a cute little girl who she was must have been about 4 or 5. And she obviously, she was observing the sign, and she kept looking at everyone in the doctor's room, and she kept looking at everyone in the doctor's room. And she turned to her mom and she asked the mom, does that mean no cell phones allowed? And the mom said, yes. And there was this man that had his cell phone out. And then she asked the mom, she was like, okay, but that man has his cell phone out. Why? So the mom was like, okay, no, you know, maybe he's just checking an important message or, you know, something like that. And she then kept looking at this man, and his phone rang and he answered. And, you know, it was, he was quite busy on his phone. He was probably a businessman or something. And eventually this little girl got so frustrated, and she went to the man and she tapped him on the knee and she said to him, no cell phones allowed. Can't you see the sign? And I tell you, everyone bursted out in laughter in the doctor.
So innocent,
She's so innocent. And I mean, those are the type of things that I say, like, children watch you and they see. Yeah. So you're trying, the mom's trying to tell her, okay, this is what that sign means. But to her, she's like, okay, but now this uncle's
it's applicable for everyone, yeah.
You know, why is he on his phone if it says no phone? So I came home. Yeah. And I was trying to tell my husband about the story, and our kids are obviously playing around. And I'm thinking, like, okay, now I'm just having a conversation with my husband. And the conversation ends, and that night we get ready for bed, and my husband takes out his cell phone, and he starts, you know, scrolling through his phone. And my two-year-old, I kid you not, lifts his head up from the couch and says to his dad, Dada! No
phone
allowed.
Look at that. They like, hear well. They see well, hey?
Exactly. So that's why everything we do, everything we say, how we carry ourselves is so important. And I know that sometimes it's a lot of pressure on us as parents as well to have to watch what we say and watch what we do. But it really is so important at the end of the day for us to at least try our best when it comes to those things, especially around our kids.
Most definitely, Kim, I agree with you. You know, just speaking a little bit about the moms, and especially now the moms between 0 and 5 years, some of the, I see you're a sports scientist, so maybe if you could just in 1 or 2 minutes, we've almost reached the end of the program, just tell us a little bit about how moms can get back into shape postpartum, you know, when they're really feeling exhausted, no energy. And I think the first 5 years take that out of you, and this new baby is taking suckling everything out of you, actually. You know, when should you get back into the exercising, and how can you actually get yourself out of that diet slump? Just maybe in a minute or two, quickly.
So I think the best way to get going is to get going as soon as you're able to. So I always say, always get your medical professional clearance before you start doing any form of exercise. So for some moms, that could be 3 weeks, 4 weeks. For some moms, they'd have to wait 6 to 8 weeks. If they've had a C-section, it might even be a little bit longer. But the minute that you feel strong enough and you're able to start moving comfortably without any difficulty, I say that's the time when you need to get going. And for me, during that time, I always encourage my clients to do things that are active. Don't focus too much on the concept of exercise and getting into the gym or walking on a treadmill or cycling on a bike. Forget about all of that. Start focusing on getting active. So put that baby in a pram. Walk for 20 minutes, 10 for walk, depending on how much time you have. Walk outside with your baby in the pram. I mean, if you have bigger kids, like I said, we spend time on the trampoline. Rebounding and jumping on a trampoline is a big form of exercise in today's time. So things like that, it really gets you going. So don't focus on the old school generalization of exercise. Get active and do things that allow you to move, get your heart rate up a little bit, and you'll be fine. You'll be surprised how much more energy you will have after having taken a walk or jumping a few minutes on the trampoline with your kid than before when you just felt like you wanted to lie on the couch.
Yes, take the step and just go ahead and do it. Thank you so much, Kim Williams. Thank you for being a part of my program today and for sharing your incredible advice with us and all your tips with us on these development stages with moms. You've been incredible. And I do thank you from the bottom of my heart for being part of our program today.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed having this chat with you.
We look forward to having you again. Thank you. Enjoy your day.
Thanks, you too. Bye.
Bye. And there you have it. That was Sister Kim Williams, who gave us some advice on the development stages of your child, the first 5 years of the development stages. Now, as a parent, you're always learning. And every parent makes mistakes, and we learn through these experiences. So your own physical and mental health is also an important part of being a parent. Don't forget that. Look after yourself. And this will help you with understanding and with patience and with imagination and the energy that you actually need to be this great parent. And no matter what stage your child is at, like Sister Kim said, at his development, it's never too late to start helping your child work on the skills and mastering these new challenges and to build a loving, strong relationship with you. So I hope you've taken away some food for thought on today's program with our guests, and they've been incredible. And a very big thank you to you, my dear listeners, for giving me your time on today's show. We have reached the end of the program, and do join us again next week, same time, as we share some more remarkable content, which is just there for you. Remember, the show is for you. It is about you, and it is for your betterment, for your peace, and for creating the best version of yourself. Do stay safe and stay blessed, inshallah. Ameen. Allahumma anta salam wa minka salam. Tabarakta ya dhal jalali wal ikram. Subhana rabbika rabbil izzati amma yasifun. Wassalamun ala al-mursaleen. Walhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.